This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. It's recess. We're outside a tiny five-room schoolhouse in a remote village in the mountains of Guatemala. On this late summer day, children play in the dirt and grass outside the blue stucco building. Some are dressed in sweatshirts, others wearing indigenous clothing, red and white shirts with embroidered collars. Veteran reporter Maria Martin is here.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Father.
Everywhere you look in this village, you see American flags painted on the sides of houses and flying in front of cinder block homes. Those houses are built with money sent home from abroad. This has been going on for generations.
¿Cuántos de ustedes tienen familia en Estados Unidos?
How many of you have family in the U.S., Maria asks.
Uno, dos,
sí.
Tres, cuatro.
Hands spring up.
Cinco, seis, muchos, no?
I asked them if they also wanted to go north to the U.S.
¿Algunos de ustedes piensan en ir en Estados Unidos?
Sí, queremos.
Most of them said yes. And I was struck by their reasons for wanting to go.
¿Por qué?
It wasn't to live a better life or to eat McDonald's or find the American dream. It was, they said, to pay their family's debts.
Debt. These 8-year-olds are worried about their family's debt. It's a story Maria heard often in her reporting in Guatemala.
This small village in the municipality of Todos Santos, Huehuetenango, is really poor. In this mostly indigenous province, the poverty rate is over 70%. People here have no opportunity to get ahead unless they have relatives in the States who can send them money. And because of this dire situation, migration has become almost a tradition, a rite of passage.
Maria has been coming to these communities for decades, living in Guatemala for more than 15 years.
I've always felt called to cover Central America because it seems that, except when there are wars or earthquakes, there's little interest in Guatemala or the Central American region. But when Trump was elected, I knew that migration would become a big political story and that despite his hardline immigration policies, people would continue to come north. And I wanted to know how that would play out in a place like this community of Todos Santos. That's where I met Zoila Calmo. She's a round-faced Maya woman who looks a little beaten down by life, and understandably so. I followed her family for the past 2 years. I've traveled to her village where she lives in a small house made of wood, metal sheeting, and dirt floors. It sits on top of a hillside with no road access and no running water. Her husband, Gilberto, who's here too, makes $6 a day when he can get work. But the work is sporadic. She feels completely abandoned by the government. Even now, the only future that Zoila and her family see is in the U.S. Zoila speaks in the Maya Mam language through a translator. She tells me about a dark day back in 2018. Her husband, Gilberto, had left the village to journey north to the U.S. He took their 8-year-old son, Franklin. just as Trump's family separation policy was at its peak.
La experiencia, señora, para mí fue bastante difícil.
Sí, pues estás triste.
She tells me that when they got to the U.S., she found out that Franklin had been separated from his father. And for months, they had no idea what happened to him.
So, Maria, when we hear about these people fleeing to the U.S., the question that often gets asked is why? Why do they leave their countries, and why should it be the responsibility of the U.S. to take them in?
Well, the answer to that question is rooted in a history that goes back to the 1950s. In 1954, the CIA, under President Eisenhower, ousted Guatemala's first democratically elected president.
Atención, Guatemala. Atención, guatemaltecos. Esta es la emisora clandestina del Movimiento Libertador Guatemalteco desde algún lugar secreto de la República.
This was during the Cold War. The U.S. claimed that supporting military dictatorships prevented the spread of communism. These were regimes that the U.S. government helped put in power and funded with taxpayer money, and that committed massacres and genocide and were responsible for the disappearance of an entire generation of Guatemalans. Over 200,000 people, according to the UN, the majority indigenous Maya. It wasn't until 1999, after Guatemala was at peace, that President Bill Clinton traveled to the country and apologized.
I will reaffirm America's commitment to shed light on the dark events of the past so that they are never repeated.
The U.S. had apologized, but the legacy of those violent conflicts remained. In the wake of those wars, corrupt politicians, not too different from military dictators, took power. They perpetuated a system where a handful of elites got much richer, and everyday Guatemalans were stuck in a cycle of poverty.
There was a moment in Guatemala when people experienced real hope and saw possibility for change.
That's right. It was a moment when the United Nations, the U.S., and Guatemala all came together in an effort to root out corruption and establish the rule of law in the country. They promised that everyone, no matter how rich or powerful, would face justice so that eventually people could live securely in a society where they could support their families. This effort was really unprecedented, but that dream was short-lived.
How that dream fell apart and who's responsible? That's what today's show is about. Reveal's Aniancy Diaz-Cortez has spent the past year working with Maria to connect those dots. It's a story that shows how families like Soyla's intersect with some of the world's most powerful players, Joe Biden, Vladimir Putin, and Donald Trump. And it all revolves around an alleged quid pro quo between Trump and a president of Guatemala. Aniancy begins the story in South America.
I fly to Bogota, Colombia, to meet the man they call the Robert Mueller of Latin America. His name is Iván Velázquez, and he brought down some of the most powerful people in Guatemala. And I'm here to talk to him about it. We meet at a Best Western in the heart of one of the fanciest neighborhoods in the city. When he steps out of his taxi, he stands out. Sunglasses, a pressed shirt, good taste in shoes. We go up the elevator and settle down for a long conversation. So let me back up a little bit. In 2013, Velázquez was put in charge of this special United Nations body called the International Commission Against Impunity, better known by its Spanish acronym, CICIG. The UN and the Guatemalan government, with backing from the US, set up the commission to root out corruption in Guatemala. This was after decades of civil war and military rule there. As head of the CICIG, Velázquez could investigate anyone, even the president. I asked him if he had any idea what he was getting into when he took this job.
En realidad, yo no sabía la situación tan compleja que me esperaba.
He tells me he had no idea how complex the situation would be, even though he'd done similar work in Colombia, where he'd investigated 139 members of Congress and brought down the president for his links to paramilitary groups. So when the UN asked him to head the CICIG, he thought,
puede ser una experiencia interesante.
It could be an interesting experience.
Y efectivamente fue una experiencia muy interesante.
And he says, without a doubt, it was a very interesting experience. Not long after Velázquez started in 2014, Guatemala was at the center of an international migration crisis. 50,000 unaccompanied children arrived at the U.S.-Mexico border, and most of them came from Central America. So President Obama dispatched Joe Biden to Guatemala City, where Biden announced the U.S. was throwing a ton of money at CICIG. It was something he talked about that whole summer.
Here's the deal. There's a lot more we can and should do in the United States to deal with the root causes of this problem.
Root causes like violence and poverty. The U.S. believed that CICIG could help prevent those by going after corruption. Velázquez's first big target went all the way to the top. He authorized wiretaps that led to bribery and fraud charges against then-President Otto Pérez Molina, who's still in prison today. With Pérez Molina behind bars, Guatemala had to hold new elections. Enter political newcomer Jimmy Morales. Morales was best known for this weekly comedy show.
Pero qué bonito lugar donde yo vivo, ¿verdad? ¿No le gusta?
It's so crass.
Yo soy la pitaya, el negrito más lindo de todos.
In almost every episode, he appears as a clown, but in blackface. And the show opens with Morales on a flying carpet. In the space of 1 minute, he makes fun of black people, blind people. He makes a crude joke about the female anatomy. This direct, bigoted appeal, it's what helped get him elected.
Pudimos ver también que él mismo fue una fabricación de los empresarios.
The business elite in Guatemala created Jimmy Morales. They paid for him to play the part.
Morales is a lot like Donald Trump. They're both very famous right-wing populists with no experience in government. Like Trump, Morales promised to drain the swamp. In fact, his campaign slogan was, ni corrupto ni ladrón, neither corrupt nor a thief.
Yo también confié.
I also believed that he could have good intentions, but...
Pero fui también engañado.
I too was fooled.
When Morales takes office, he has the support of the United States. At his inauguration in 2016, Vice President Joe Biden flies to Guatemala again. Biden walks down the stairs of Air Force Two, whips off his sunglasses, and waves to the crowd. President Morales is there, waiting to greet him on the tarmac. Later, the two world leaders meet at the Intercontinental Hotel.
I spend so much time.
The audio is a little hard to hear, but Biden is joking that he spends so much time in Central America, maybe he should run for office in Guatemala. Biden and Morales sit in heavy armchairs, a few feet apart, talking as the press cameras flash.
I want to compliment you.
Biden doesn't just congratulate Morales. He announces $750 million in USAID to Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras.
We are all in.
That money would go to the military, to economic development, and to CICIG to fight corruption. Just a week before Obama and Biden left office, Velázquez is photographed holding an oversized check from the U.S. Embassy for $7.5 million.
When you can investigate, justice becomes achievable. Citizens develop a civil conscience. They become aware of and respect the law.
Y también de temor en todos estos corruptos.
Sitting fear amongst the corrupt.
It was a dream team. Velázquez's UN office, President Jimmy Morales, and the Guatemalan Supreme Court pulling together with U.S. backing. Velázquez told me that for the first time, Guatemalan people were seeing the powerful being held accountable. And then...
I, Donald John Trump, Do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully...
Donald Trump takes office. By then, things had begun to unravel between Velasquez and Morales. It starts with breakfast. 500 breakfast, actually. Velasquez was investigating a case of fraud. Someone had charged the government $11,000 for breakfast that were never served. So Velasquez reaches out to Morales.
And I told the president, did you hear about this investigation? Your son's name appeared and it seems he has participated in fraud.
Debería presentarse su hijo.
I think your son should go before a judge.
Several members of Morales' family were implicated. It wasn't a lot of money, but Velasquez says that's not the point.
Hemos visto, hemos conocido siempre en el país.
What we have known and seen always in this country is that justice does not reach the powerful. And our stance was serious. Nobody is above the law.
Velasquez urges Morales to go on national television and condemn corruption in his own family. And Morales does.
Mi esposa y yo respaldamos plenamente a nuestro hijo.
With his wife by his side, Morales tells the country that they support their family and that he also believes justice should run its course.
Que respetamos a las instituciones responsables de impartir justicia en nuestro país.
But that speech, it's not enough for Velasquez. He wants the president's family members to stand before a judge. And the breakfast, well, they were part of a much larger investigation. In fact, Velasquez was looking to impeach Morales for campaign finance violations. Morales was not okay with that.
Pueblo de Guatemala, como ya lo he manifestado en mi mensaje.
So Morales posts a video on Twitter that ends up on national television where he denounces Velasquez.
He declares me persona non grata. Oh, and he also demands that I leave Guatemala, effective immediately.
But Velasquez refuses to leave the country and won't disband CICIG.
I think that in this situation,
se cayeron las máscaras.
The masks came off.
Que ya la gente era como era.
Everyone was who they really were.
The people of Guatemala take to the streets to support Velasquez. But then the Guatemalan Congress gets involved. Lawmakers declare Morales immune from prosecution. CICIG is allowed to keep going with its other anti-corruption work, but Morales is off limits. So Morales and Velasquez, they're kind of at a stalemate. But there's another campaign happening outside of Guatemala, one that will eventually bring down Velasquez.
After the break, Anyansi takes us 3,000 miles from Guatemala to a coffee shop in San Francisco. There, she meets a foreign agent who wants to topple Velasquez.
We wanted the CICIG out.
And we head back to the hills of rural Guatemala, where families like Soilas still dream of a better life in the States. This is Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
For Reveal comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is an all-in-one management software with apps for every business need. Odoo has apps for CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, manufacturing, and everything in between, and they're all in one easy-to-use software. And the best part about Odoo? All Odoo apps are integrated, helping you get things done faster and more efficiently. So when you think about business, think Odoo. To learn more, visit odoo.com/reveal. That's odoo.com/reveal.
This podcast is supported by Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Americans United defends your freedom to live as yourself and believe as you choose, so long as you don't harm others. Core freedoms like abortion rights, marriage equality, public education, and even democracy itself rest upon the wall of separation between church and state. A network of anti-democratic groups are attacking these freedoms, seeking to force us all to live by their narrow beliefs. Americans United is fighting back. Freedom without favor and equality without exception. Learn more about AU's work at au.org/MJ.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson. This week, we're spending the hour talking about Guatemala. And how what happens there is connected to decisions made here in the U.S. We left off with crusading prosecutor Ivan Velasquez standing his ground, refusing to leave Guatemala despite pressure from the president, former TV comedian Jimmy Morales. Reveal's Anayansi Diaz-Cortez picks up the story from here. Tracking down one of Velasquez's most relentless opponents in the unlikeliest of places.
We're in a coffee shop in San Francisco to meet a man who's part of this campaign to bring down Velasquez. It's just a few days before the pandemic closes everything and the place is crowded. Since we're in the Bay Area, we start...
These are California sun cakes.
...with vegan cookies.
Have a bite. See if you like it. I hope you do.
This is David Landau. And before we get to those cookies, let me tell you how we ended up here. While we were reporting the story, we kept hearing about this international lobbying organization called the Association for the Rule of Law in Central America. We have no idea who's behind this group. We have just one clue. This document we uncovered filed under the Foreign Agents Registration Act. Scribbled at the bottom is the name of the American representative, David Landau. And this is where the world gets smaller. It turns out that my editor on this story, Aaron Glantz, he knows David.
Yeah, you showed me this document and I saw his name and I was like, David Landau? With an address on the west side of San Francisco? I know David Landau. I worked with him at a radio station 20 years ago.
So Aaron arranges for us to meet David in this coffee shop.
I decided to make it easy for you because I know you. I've known Aaron for a long time.
David's an independently wealthy white guy. He dresses like a beatnik and still takes pride in being the editor of the Harvard Crimson back in the early 1970s. He doesn't seem to have to do anything for money, so he spends his time on his hobby, writing about Latin America.
So we ask him what his role is in this Guatemalan lobbying group.
I agreed to become, you know, the American whatever it was. What was I? Am I a director? Am I the president? I don't even remember what I am.
Actually, he's listed as the director on the document we mentioned.
We wanted the CCIG out. The activity was an effort at political persuasion between the government of Guatemala and find a way of reaching the president.
In other words, they wanted to get Donald Trump to end CCIG. As for who his associates are, that was tougher to get out of him.
Who are you helping?
Who are the people?
Yeah.
I was helping the funders of this activity and then the people who are carrying it out. But it wouldn't really be responsible for me to say who they were.
So he's not going to tell us who's providing the money. And he doesn't have to. Because in America, if you're lobbying on behalf of a foreign interest, you have to tell the government that you're doing it. But you don't have to say where the money is coming from.
Can I just say this? The unfavorable way to look at this is money laundering, right? Because there are actors who are hiring a lobbyist, and you are not those actors, but you are putting your name and it obscures the actual actors from the public view.
No, it doesn't. I mean, the fact is that I happen to be the one with an American address. It's post office box, whatever it was.
I don't understand why David, an independently wealthy gringo, is so invested in Guatemala. And what's more, where does this grudge against Sisig come from? We spent 2 hours talking to David, and he weaves this complicated story, which essentially boils down to this.
Oh, they're Marxists. Velázquez and his gang.
Even now, in the 21st century, David still sees communists everywhere. It goes back to this old idea that by going after the rich and powerful in Guatemala, Sisig is following a Marxist agenda to redistribute the wealth. You sometimes hear the same sort of thing from conservative politicians in the U.S. who consider tax reform that helps the poor socialism. But David claims that's not it. He says Velázquez is a Marxist because he acts like a dictator. He even lumps Velázquez in with what he calls the children of Fidel Castro. David says Sisig showed its true colors in 2018.
Sisig began to work with the Russians. It began to work with Putin. And
you're saying this with a straight face. You realize how crazy this sounds to a U.S. audience?
Yeah, but this was proven. This was demonstrated.
I should say, there's no evidence that Velázquez worked with Putin or ever took money from him. And Putin isn't even a Marxist.
A family called the Bitkovs, who had fled from the USSR. It's me in the 20th century. Russia, okay? They fled from Russia, and the Sisig took on the case of the Bitkov family.
The Bitkovs are a family of Russian millionaires. Putin went after them for embezzlement, so they fled to Guatemala and bought fake passports to get Guatemalan citizenship. Velázquez had charges brought against them, and the Bitkovs were thrown in prison. This is where David is trying to draw that Putin-Velázquez connection. It all sounds like a fringy conspiracy theory, but David's ideas soon make their way into the mainstream. First, the Wall Street Journal publishes a series of columns supporting the Bitkovs, and before you know it,
that is why we're having this hearing.
Lawmakers are talking about it in the halls of Congress. In April 2018, Republican Congressman Chris Smith questioned why Velázquez prosecuted the Bitkovs.
These sentences were far harsher than those given the Guatemalan officials who perpetrated the sale of passports. They're harsher than sentences given to rapists and to murderers.
Lawmakers also suggested Velázquez was working with Putin. This is the same thing David Landau told us. Velázquez turned down an invitation to testify at this hearing. When we were in Colombia, we asked him if he had any connections to Russia.
Are you a Russian agent? ¿Usted es agente de Vladimir Putin?
Ni siquiera conozco Rusia.
He tells me he's never been to Russia.
No tengo ninguna relación de ninguna naturaleza. Con ningún ruso.
He has no relationship with anyone from Russia. And Sisig has never received a single cent from anyone in Russia. No one has provided any evidence to the contrary. Velázquez says the reason they wanted him out has nothing to do with Russia or Marxism. It has to do with who has power in Guatemala and how to keep it.
Es como una narrativa sacada de un libro de la Guerra Fría.
I tell Velázquez it all seems like a Cold War novel.
Sí, de la Guerra Fría.
Yes, he says.
Pero escrito por García Márquez.
But one written by Gabriel García Márquez. Velázquez was experiencing the solitude of his office. He was losing his political allies in the White House, while Jimmy Morales was becoming closer to President Trump. They even attended the National Prayer Breakfast in Washington together.
President Jimmy Morales tells President Trump, I understand what you're going through.
Yo lo comprendo.
You are being persecuted by Robert Mueller in the States. I am being persecuted by Iván Velázquez in Guatemala. I know how much you've suffered through all this.
Velázquez was in trouble. His old ally, Joe Biden, was gone. And when Nikki Haley, Trump's ambassador to the United Nations, paid Guatemala a visit, she told Velasquez to tone it down, stop bragging that you're more popular than the government, and get rid of those I love CCIG bumper stickers.
Cuando la embajadora...
When Ambassador Nikki Haley visits Guatemala, it is an explicit show of support for Morales. She has a series of complaints for me. Stop doing press conferences, anonymity. That is what is expected of my role at CCIG.
Within days of returning to Washington, Nikki Haley was talking about Guatemala again.
Thank you so much. You guys are amazing. Thank you so much.
Haley's speaking at the AIPAC convention, the largest pro-Israel lobby. Trump had recently announced that the U.S. was moving its embassy to Jerusalem, a city both Palestinians and Israelis claim as their capital.
God bless Guatemala. They even joined us in moving their embassy to Jerusalem.
You know who else spoke there? Jimmy Morales. He got a standing ovation.
Buenas tardes. Good afternoon. Hoy es un buen día.
We start to see a budding bromance between Trump and Morales. Velasquez believes the lobbyists help bring them together by telling Morales, move the embassy and Trump will help you out. And what did Morales want in exchange?
What Morales really wanted?
Que no continuara la CICIG.
Was to end CICIG. And if that was not possible, he wanted to make sure that at least I was no longer running it.
So what's going on here? We started with David Landau. He and his lobbyist group wanted CICIG out. He had a theory that Velasquez was working with Vladimir Putin. A Wall Street Journal columnist and members of Congress piled on. Velasquez is on the outs with the U.S. while Morales is getting cozier with Trump. About 6 months after Morales pledged to move the embassy to Jerusalem, Velasquez turns on the TV.
Buenas tardes. Pueblo de Guatemala.
And there's the president. Surrounding him are 50 military officers backing him up as he announces.
Que la CICIG no va a continuar.
CICIG will not continue. Jeeps with mounted artillery are summoned to the capital. They park in front of the CICIG, the machine guns manned and pointed.
Esto está militarizado.
A threat with the military.
The U.S. military had provided the Jeeps to fight drug trafficking. It's a tense situation. Velasquez picks up the phone.
Yo?
I then...
Hablo con el embajador de Estados Unidos.
Talk to the U.S. ambassador.
But the United States won't help. And all of this shook Guatemalan society to the bone. It was a dark reminder of the civil war and military rule.
Guatemala es un país que sufrió por décadas la dictadura militar y una represión inmisericorde.
Guatemala is a country that for decades suffered merciless repression by military dictatorship. An entire generation of intellectuals killed. There was a genocide.
Un genocidio. Mataron miles de indígenas desaparecidos, torturados, con toda la acción de los gobiernos militares.
Thousands of indigenous people murdered, disappeared, tortured, all commanded by a government ruled by the military. So, a military presence literally behind the president? It was a reminder, especially for those over 40 years old. This is how things used to be.
Velasquez tries to stick it out. But when he leaves the country for UN meetings in New York a few days later, Morales issues another public statement.
Then they declare that I will not be allowed back into Guatemala.
Que no me van a dejar entrar.
I will not be let in.
In spite of this, he boards his plane to Guatemala City and he's deported.
My personal belongings stayed in Guatemala, but were later shipped to me.
To Bogota, Colombia, his home country, where we met earlier this year. Velasquez says Morales also did something else for President Trump. In July 2019, Trump announces the so-called Safe Third Country Agreement with Morales.
We've signed agreements with Guatemala that have been tremendous in terms of really both countries, but our country with respect to illegals coming into our country.
Under this deal, migrants from other Central American countries, like Honduras and El Salvador, cannot apply for asylum in the U.S. Instead, they have to ask for asylum in Guatemala.
Guatemala's been terrific.
1 month before this deal was announced, the Trump administration took care of one of Morales' biggest headaches. It cut off U.S. funding to CICIG. I asked Velasquez if it was a quid pro quo.
Yes, yes. It's a transaction where both parties seek to win something.
Usted apóyenos a nosotros de esta persecución que desata la CICIG contra nosotros.
You help us by ending this persecution unleashed by the CICIG, and we will help you. And how do you shut down CICIG? By cutting the funds.
Y eso fue finalmente lo que lograron.
And that is exactly what happened.
Velasquez doesn't have documentation to back up his claim. We did talk to a senior State Department official who told us he doesn't have evidence of a direct quid pro quo either. But he said CICIG was a bargaining chip and both sides got what they wanted. Morales wanted CICIG gone, and the Trump administration wanted Central Americans to stay in Central America. The Trump administration wouldn't respond to our questions, but Trump has said he cut funding to CICIG because it hadn't done anything for the U.S. We also tried to reach Jimmy Morales. I got cell phone numbers for his son and his brother, you know, the breakfast people. And this summer, I gave them a call.
Hello?
¿Aló, podría hablar con el señor Samuel Morales?
Claro que sí, a las órdenes. ¿Quién habla?
Morales' brother Sammy picked up. We talked for 20 minutes, but he didn't agree to be interviewed on air. He told me that CICIG was corrupt and that Velasquez was only interested in publicity. He sent a SWAT team to my home. He made a scandal over $11,000, Sammy told me. After Velasquez was kicked out of Guatemala, Sammy was acquitted. Velasquez tried to run CICIG from Colombia, but the end of U.S. money made that impossible.
Trump and Morales say Guatemala is safe. But if it's safe, why are thousands of people fleeing every year? When we come back, we head to the hills of Guatemala and investigate. That's coming up on Reveal. From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Ledson. Today, we've been investigating the larger political forces around President Trump's immigration policy. Before the break, we heard how the Guatemalan president, Jimmy Morales, sent tanks to surround the headquarters of CICIG, the UN-backed anti-corruption commission. Veteran journalist Maria Martin was there in September of 2019, a few days before CICIG finally closed its doors for good.
To get to the CICIG's headquarters, I have to walk past a concrete wall and through a metal gate with guards. The mood is somber, as if somebody had died.
Ahí, esa es la silla del comisionado Iván Velázquez.
CICIG spokesman Matias Ponce points out the chair where Iván Velázquez used to sit.
Sobre esta mesa?
Tapping the furniture, as if to bring back the past, Ponce tells me about the 120 corruption cases that were investigated on this exact table.
Se decidieron 120 casos que se presentaron en estos 12 años de historia sobre esta mesa.
We continue our conversation in English.
Some people say that this decision to get rid of the CICIG by the Morales government will take Guatemala back decades of effort. Decades.
Decades of effort because we were able to show to the people that the law is important to make a better country, independently of your economic and political power. All of society should respect the law.
Ponce says CICIG's building is expected to be demolished. And just like that, the UN anti-corruption force that took on two presidents and represented a beacon of hope for an entire generation of Guatemalans is no more. Without its esponse, many Guatemalans are afraid. That brings us back to Zoila and her family, who we met earlier in the show. I've made so many trips to Zoila's small village. It's in a mountainous province near Guatemala's border with Mexico that sends more people to the United States than anywhere else in Central America. During the Civil War in the 1980s, Todos Santos was a center of bloodshed. For generations, these indigenous communities have been marginalized. Systemic discrimination has denied them access to education and health care, while investment has passed them by. And even today, there's little evidence of Guatemalan government support here or of that U.S. aid money that Joe Biden was talking about. The main economy here isn't factories or coffee. It's money sent home from abroad, from family members who have gone north. Everywhere you look, there are spacious, multi-story, American-style suburban homes. But for those who don't have relatives abroad, there's little for them here. I drive past Todos Santos and towards Zoila's village. We climb up higher into the mountains on a narrow, winding road. In some parts of this region, people raise sheep, but here it's quiet. The houses get smaller, and the roads turn to dirt. When we heard from Zoila earlier, she was telling us the story of how her husband Gilberto and their son Franklin had been separated by the U.S. Border Patrol. Gilberto tells me what happened next. After they were separated, Gilberto was taken to a jail in Florence, Arizona. He didn't know what happened to Franklin.
¿Y dónde está Franklin, mi hijo? ¿Dónde está? No sé dónde está Franklin. ¿Dónde está a Franklin?
This was Gilberto's second trip to the U.S. He'd also come north in the early 2000s. He worked in construction, building suburban tract homes outside San Diego. But he was deported after a traffic stop. This time, sitting in the detention center in Arizona, he's given a choice: incarceration or deportation. Gilberto says that in his cold cell, he couldn't take the sadness. He thought he was going to die, and he had no idea where Franklin was. So Gilberto made a difficult decision. He signed his deportation papers, leaving Franklin in the United States.
Tonight,
what are you doing?
Outrage across the country.
Do you agree that we need to take care of those children?
This was at the height of President Trump's family separation policy. His administration was separating thousands of children from their parents at the border and incarcerating them in gyms, warehouses, and even cages. As for Zoila, she tells me through a mom to Spanish translator about those dark days in 2018. When she didn't know what had happened to her husband or to her son.
Dice la señora que cuando el niño fue separado con ese trauma, ella de una vez se enfermó. Por la tristeza, por Franklin, se quedó con el dolor de los pies. Dice que no puede caminar.
Zoila said it was so hard when Franklin was gone that she started to get physically ill. I thought he was dead, and I was sick from the sadness. My whole body ached, she tells me. Zoila fell apart, outraged that her husband had gone to the U.S. and returned without her son. She thought she would never see Franklin again. Zoila fell into a deep depression. Most days, she didn't even get out of bed. She knew she needed help, but couldn't afford to go to the doctor. And as for Gilberto, he had traveled 2,000 miles twice. He wanted to be able to send money home so that one day he could build one of those glorious suburban-style homes for his wife and children. But he'd been deported twice, and now his family was accusing him of abandoning Franklin. Finally, Gilberto finds a lawyer in town, and with his help, they're able to track Franklin down.
¿Dónde está a Franklin? Franklin está en Nueva York.
Where is Franklin? He was in New York, imprisoned in a federal detention center for children separated from their parents. When they finally reach him on the phone, it's heart-wrenching.
Cuando hablo con él, Franklin, pues él estaba llorando. ¿Y por qué me dejaste? Pues él, ¿dónde está mi papá?
Why did you leave me here? Franklin asked. I didn't know where you were. When am I going to go back?
Me siento triste. ¿Cuándo voy a regresar?
Gilberto didn't know what to answer. From his small village, even making a phone call was difficult. But finally, with the lawyer's help, 6 months after they were separated, Gilberto gets some good news. He's told to go to Guatemala City, that Franklin will be waiting for him there. Franklin was reunited with his parents on October 28, 2018. Around the same time, the head of CICIG, Ivan Velasquez, was kicked out of the country. Franklin was still struggling to readjust to life in the village. I visited them the following September, while CICIG was closing its doors for good. Franklin and I sit together, opening bottles of Coke right at the bottom of the hill not far from their house. His mother, Zoila, brings out a meal of boiled eggs and black beans. I try to make conversation with Franklin about what the shelter was like in the U.S., but he's withdrawn. The first time I saw him, he shrank against the wall. His father, Gilberto, says that Franklin came back a different little boy. He used to be talkative. And even now, a year after he came back home, when I ask him about his time in detention, it's hard for him to say more than a simple yes or no. The only time he lights up is to say he liked the food he got there. ¿Qué comías ahí?
Cornflakes, Doritos.
I liked the cornflakes and donuts at the shelter, he says. The family is happy to be back together. But at the same time, Zoila and Gilberto don't have enough money to feed their three children one meal a day, every day. So for all the heartache, Gilberto says he didn't see any other choice when he took Franklin to the U.S.
¿Por qué me fui? Por pobreza y para mantener la familia.
Why did I go, he says? Por pobreza. Because of poverty. He was making a decision to support his family. And in these western highlands of Guatemala, Gilberto's story is one shared by many.
Yo trabajo de agricultor todos los días. Cuando no hay, voy a traer leña.
The only job Gilberto can find is picking potatoes or gathering wood. Gilberto makes $6 a day, but often can only find work 2 or 3 days a week.
Tengo un trabajo así seguido, nada, ¿no?
Gilberto says even though the family is back together, they are poorer than before.
Me costó casi 30 mil quetzales.
To get to the States, Gilberto borrowed close to $6,000 from a bank to hire a coyote to get them across the border. He still owes the bank that money.
Yo debo el dinero ahorita. Ese es el problema. No hay nada, no tengo nada. No tengo. Entonces, no es tan fácil. Todavía está con la deuda.
He wants to pay off the debt, but he only makes $6 a day. So he can't even pay the interest on his loans. Today, the U.S. border with Mexico is closed. And with coronavirus, in Guatemala, people are also sheltering in place. Meanwhile, Deportation flights sending migrants back from the U.S. continue, hundreds of them since March. In late April, the Guatemalan government said that 20% of all COVID cases in Guatemala were coming from people deported by the U.S. One U.S. congresswoman accused Trump of exporting death.
Hello?
I've been checking in on Zoila, Gilberto, and Franklin since then.
Hello?
Hello? ¿Con quién hablo?
Yo soy Franklin.
Franklin, ¿cómo estás?
Bien.
When I called this month, Franklin had come out of his shell enough to tell me that with the lockdown, they aren't allowed to leave their village. And because of the coronavirus, there's even less work than before.
No hay dinero.
No hay dinero.
There's no money, he tells me. There's no food, and there's no firewood.
Que Dios los cuide, okay?
Okay. Gracias, José María.
Adios. Goodbye.
Bye. Thank you.
Franklin's father, Gilberto, still fantasizes about going back north. But there's no way he could secure another loan for a third trip to the U.S.
Cuando Franklin quiere regresar otra vez, pues, cuando ya tenía sus 18 años.
He tells me that he's waiting for Franklin, who's now 10, to reach his 18th birthday.
Pues, ¿cuándo va a ser el más grande? Pues, es lo que yo quiero, sí.
Then his son Franklin can try his luck going north alone.
Since CICIG was kicked out of the country, we've seen a return to the way things used to be. Guatemala's new president, Alejandro Giammatte, has deep ties to drug mafias and former military officials. He used to oversee the prison system, and CICIG came after him for illegally killing prisoners. Since he took office, 12 human rights defenders have been killed in Guatemala, and others have had to flee the country. Thanks to reporter Maria Martin. Her book, Crossing Borders, Building Bridges, A Journalist's Heart in Latin America, is out this month. Our lead producer this week is Aniyansi Diaz-Cortez. Aaron Glantz edited the show with help from executive producer Kevin Sullivan. Thanks to Professor Joe Marie Burt of George Mason University, Felix Perez Mendoza, Luis Solano, Maria Martin Mendoza, Jimena Villagran, Henry Bean, Monica Campbell, Kate Doyle, Jose Carlos Zamora, and Reveal's Laura Morell. And Willie Vergara provided voiceover for us. Thanks to the Fund for Investigative Journalism for supporting Maria Martin's reporting in Guatemala. And special shout out to Prisca Neely for her help on the show. This was her last week at Reveal. Best of luck to you, Prisca. Our production managers are Najib Amini. Original score and sound design by the dynamic duo, Jay Breezy, Mr. Jim Briggs, and Fernando, my man, Yo Aruda. They had help this week from Amy Mustafa. Our CEO is Krista Scharfenberg. Matt Thompson is our editor-in-chief. Our theme music is by Camarado, Lightning. Support for Reveal is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Jonathan Logan Family Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Heising Simons Foundation, the Democracy Fund, and the Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Letson, and remember, there is always more to the story.